There is a sign in the kitchen which reads, "Complaints to the cook can be hazardous to your health." This is a reflection of our attitude toward criticism. Most of us welcome honest feedback, as long as it is flattering and complimentary. Anyone in a leadership role of any kind, whether it is in the home, classroom, or business office, realizes that there are times when he has to demand better performance, punish someone who has refused to cooperate, or set some issues straight. Regardless of your good intentions at such a time, correction and criticism is not pleasant to the person receiving your attention. You can, however, improve your skills at correcting people so that it does not cost you goodwill and cooperation. The definition of criticism is pointing out a fault. This is also known as negative feedback. That raises the question of why have negative feedback at all? We prefer to get compliments and praise because it makes us feel good. So why have criticism at all? I'm sure as a child you played a game where somebody hid something in the room, and then you had the person leave the room, and when they came back in, you would give them a message of hot or cold as the person got closer or further away from that object. So we need balance, hot and cold, positive and negative. Criticism is an effective learning experience. Successful people in this world are not people who avoid mistakes or errors. They're the ones who learn from them. And we all make mistakes. Henry Ford, in inventing the automobile, made one big mistake. He left out reverse. We have some problem reactions from taking criticism. Criticism tends to stir up guilt, resentment, anger, and strong emotional feeling. There are three categories of handling criticism. Notice which one you fall into when taking criticism. The first reaction is fight. In saying, "I don't want to hear about it," you deny the criticism. You turn it down and fight it. If someone criticizes you, your response may be, "You're out of your mind," or, "Keep your opinions to yourself." In this case, you are fighting the criticism. The second way of handling criticism is flight. When you're using flight, you're saying, "Don't criticize me because I can't face it. I can't discuss it." And you feel to yourself, "How can I be so stupid?" Or, "I never do anything right." You might start crying or become overwhelmed by it. Now, flight seems to be the opposite of fight. Fight is aggressive, and flight is timid. But actually, they have more in common than contrast. In flight, as in fight, you also deny the criticism by saying, "I don't want to talk about it. I'm too sensitive." And so you are denying the issue, whether it's tears or whether it's fighting. These two reactions are refusals to examine the truth. The third reaction is to evaluate. This is where we've been advised by our parent figures to be objective and open-minded. The problem is that it's easier said than done. When you tell me to be objective, how do I go about doing that? Here are some steps to evaluate criticism. Number one, ask yourself, "What can I learn from this person?" There's something to be learned if you look for it. Number two, agree with part of the criticism. If you do that, here's what you will accomplish. You will let the person know that he has been heard. You get out of the whole argument that says, "You haven't been listening to me." You've indicated, "Yes, I've mentally processed that comment." You're admitting, "I'm not perfect, and I can stand some improvement." When you do this, you take the wind out of their sails. If you say, "You know, there's some truth in what you're telling me about that," then you don't have an opponent. Number three, be sure you understand the criticism. Many times we get criticized, and it's not really clear what the person is getting at. This is because he states it in generalized terms instead of behavioral terms. It's a fact the criticism is often stated in a way that is not very useful. If you don't understand the criticism, question the person with an information-seeking tone of voice, not a threatening tone of voice. Question that person to find out exactly what they mean. Now, that's hard to do if you have a fight reaction. So remind yourself to ask one question. Say to them, Tell me more about your viewpoint. Number 4. Take time out and say, I'd like to think about that, and then I'll call you back tomorrow morning. Give yourself time to digest the criticism before responding. Number 5. Analyze and get the facts. Good data makes good decisions. Number 6. Adjust your behavior if you decide to. Many people feel that they're being forced to change when they're criticized, and no wonder they fight back. But it's your decision. Keep in mind, what can I learn from this criticism? We're talking about taking criticism first, because we've been advised to be empathetic with others so that we understand what they're going through. If we know how to take criticism, we also have a sensitivity because we've been examining how we feel. When a criticism is stated, it is given from that person's viewpoint, and it's one person's way of looking at it. So when you give criticism, you are saying, this is my viewpoint. When giving criticism, here are some opening lines to avoid. This is none of my business, but. Don't get angry, but. You are implanting the idea that you're going to do the very thing you're claiming to avoid. This is an attempt to be tactful, and it is not successful. The negative suggestion will stay in the person's mind rather than the disclaimer. When is it appropriate to give criticism? Is honesty enough of a reason? Many hurtful statements are made in the name of honesty. There's a saying that I like that goes, there's honesty and there's brutality, but there's no such thing as brutal honesty. In fact, if anyone comes up to you and says, let me be perfectly honest, it's not going to be a compliment. In fact, it's going to be a real zinger, and they are attempting to sugarcoat the attack. Honesty alone is not a good enough reason to give criticism. Here are some reasons to give criticism. Number 1, responsibility. If you're a supervisor and you answer for the work of your subordinates, it's important for you to use criticism because you have to set job standards. This is shown very clearly when a secretary types a letter for you. Now, if there are errors on the letter, you're signing your name to that person's work, and so you're accountable and need to give criticism to guide that person's performance. Number 2, parenting. As a parent, you're responsible for some of your child's behavior, and so it's important to criticize them to correct that behavior. Number 3, protecting human rights. Suppose you're riding in a car with someone and they're speeding along. You have a right to say to that person, don't drive so fast, because you have a right to stay alive. And so you need to give the criticism. You might say, I'm uncomfortable with you driving at that speed and I'd like you to slow down. You have a right to make criticism. Number 4, intimate relationships. We tell intimate friends or mates things we wouldn't tell others. We might discuss their haircut or their skirt length or their clothes, and we're doing this to be supportive to these people. Realize that this is not a license to kill. We still need to have tact and sensitivity. Number 5, crisis. In a crisis situation, you simply yell out the criticism and make it a command, and it's instantly given. There's no time to say, well, let's talk about this. The crisis calls for criticism on the spot. If you want people to accept your criticism, you have to build a trust level. And this trust level comes before the criticism. That means that at other times, you're praising these people. Also set standards in advance. Let people know what you require. You'll have much less resentment from that person when you give criticism if they know the standards in advance. Also provide privacy. If you're going to give criticism, take the person aside or shut the door. Get the audience's attention or situation out of it. Let them know that you're not playing to an audience. This will keep their emotions in perspective and help them concentrate on the issue. Also, seek information before you begin. Suppose you see someone just standing around on the job, and you go tell that person what you think of that kind of behavior. Before you do that, you might say to yourself, seek information first, and go over to them and say, You know, I've noticed you standing here for about 30 minutes. Tell me more about that. What's the reason? And then that person might tell you that they're on a special assignment, that the president of the company asked them to stand there and wait for a package that was going to be delivered. Now, if you'd given him that criticism for just standing around, you would have been embarrassed. Next, be constructive, be specific, and use behavioral terms. Give the criticism of the behavior, not the person. For example, if the person were using poor English, perhaps a double negative, you wouldn't want to go up to them and say, "You have terrible English," because then you're criticizing the person and not their behavior, and the person doesn't know what to change. It might be better to say, "You know, you're using a double negative, and if you say it this way, that's the correct way." It's irritating to people when you're not specific, so it's important then to criticize the performance and not the performer. Also use words that deal with future improvement. A poor choice would be, "Don't mess this up like you did last time," because this is a negative affirmation that you put on that person. Look to the future. Speak in terms of improvement and say to them, "The next time I'd like you to do it this way." Deal in things, not personalities. If you criticize the person instead of their behavior, they will consider it a personal attack. If you say to them, "You are a sloppy typist," then that person is resentful and angry and will sabotage you the next time they type something. The better choice would be, "This letter has 5 mistakes and it needs to be typed again." Again, deal with things rather than attacking the person with labels or personal descriptions. In communication, there is something that is known as the sandwich or the Oreo cookie technique. It has 3 parts: the cookie, the filling, and the cookie. The first part is the positive comments. You tell them what you like and appreciate them and what they are doing. Then in between, you put in the negative, what you don't like or what you want them to improve. Then you end on a positive note, expressing a belief that things will get better. Expressing trust in the person's ability to improve, you have given the person permission to change without losing faith. So you have the positive, the negative, and the positive. I'm sure you can see the theory that you leave the person with a pleasant thought. This technique is sometimes used so extensively that when you receive a compliment, you start to think, "Here comes a negative." You start to get paranoid when someone compliments you. If you have a problem with the sandwich technique, I'd like to give you an additional formula called EFA. It is an empathetic remark, a factual remark, and a call for action. For example, you are in a restaurant that is very busy and you have a problem getting service. Now you recognize that the waitress is busy, and if you don't give criticism just the right way, she's probably going to break down in tears, or worse, she'll probably try to get revenge on you and punish you. Now you may either have a fight or flight reaction. Using the EFA principle, you would say to the waitress, "I realize you're very busy." So this is empathetic. You're saying to the waitress, "I understand where you're coming from." Number 2 is factual. You say, "I have an appointment." Don't apologize for the appointment or qualify it or say, "I know this isn't your fault, but..." Just state a plain fact. "I have an appointment in 30 minutes. Then number 3, a call for action. Again, without apology, say, "I need to have my food served immediately." Be assertive, be considerate, be clear and direct. It's emotionally painful to discover that your efforts do not meet the expectations of others. Criticism causes us to get our feelings hurt and our sensitivity stepped on. By the same token, you may dread giving criticism because you vividly recall your own discomfort at taking criticism, and you may put off a confrontation and let simple problems grow out of proportion. Constructive confrontation may be described as a deliberate attempt to help another person examine the consequences of some aspect of his behavior. It is an invitation to self-examination. Confrontation is a way of expressing concern for another person and a wish to increase the mutual involvement in the relationship. The purpose of a confrontation is to free the person being confronted to engage in more fruitful or less destructive behavior. Here are some guidelines. Do not confront another person if you do not intend to increase your involvement with him. You need to consider what to say, why it is important to say it, what the real motives are for saying it, how the person will react, and how you can help them deal non-defensively with the data, to understand and internalize it, to become aware of the implications, and to consider other alternatives for future choices. To do less is not an act out of helping, but probably an act out of hostility. Confront only if you experience feelings of caring. The only honest reason for offering a confrontation is the belief that awareness of the information will enhance the present and future well-being of the person. Confront only if the relationship has gone beyond the initial stages of development or if basic trust has been established. Make sure a person's defensiveness is under control. Otherwise, he will discount the information and alienation is a likely outcome. Some responses seem to facilitate in-depth interaction, self-examination, and beliefs, while other responses seem to block that process. Here are some blocks to open communication. Put downs and personal criticisms such as, "You've got to be kidding when you say that." Rejection of feelings. "Come on, there's no reason for you to be upset." Advice giving or pressing for a course of action before relevant facts are known, such as, "Why don't you just go tell your boss off?" Opinion giving, especially if it is offered so that there is no room to present another point of view. Asking a series of interrogating, data-gathering questions or why questions that require justifications, such as, "Why did you do a dumb thing like that?" Support given in a patronizing way, such as, "Lots of people feel that way," or lecturing, moralizing, and sermonizing, "When I was a child." To open and broaden communication channels and stimulate a more in-depth level of thinking, you may choose one of these responses. Summarize what you have heard. Respond to the other person's feelings and beliefs without judging them. Request clarification. You might say, "I'm not sure I understand. Can you give me another example of when this has happened?" Give I messages, such as, "I'm eager to know what you did," or, "I'm disappointed that things didn't work out as you had hoped." Make low-level inferences. For example, you may say, "I am sensing that you were very disappointed," or, "I have a hunch that it was a very difficult thing for you to do that." These responses allow people to broaden their relationship to include differing interests, differing points of view, and differing experiences. There are also situations in which compliments are appropriate in life. A realistic statement of a person's capacities, resources, and good qualities at a time when he is discouraged or faced with a difficult situation is very helpful and constructive. At such a time, it is particularly important to be precise, clear, and concrete, since a person may find it hard to believe compliments when he is feeling low, and it is important to prove them by the use of facts and logic. When evaluating someone, the positive statements should be as numerous, clear, and detailed as a criticism. The highest form of a compliment is the perception of a talent, a strength, or a belief in the person before he is aware of it. The compliment makes the person aware of this hidden portion of the self in such a way that it is brought to blossom. This form of compliment is appropriate at any time. Compliments are helpful in disagreements and discussions. If they are honest and apt, they ease the tension of confrontation and make a productive outcome more likely. Compliments that show respect and appreciation for the honesty and goodwill of one's opponent make it possible for the opponent to look at the possibility of being wrong without feeling bad about himself. For instance, a poor response in a disagreement would be, "You are all wrong because your premise is wrong." A good response would be, Your position is clearly and logically stated. Unfortunately, I can't agree with your premise because respect was shown to the speaker's skill in the second example. He is more likely not to hold on to his position out of pride, and he is less likely to develop personal animosity. Compliments should be true and honest. For example, to tell someone, "I'm sure you'll succeed because you have so much enthusiasm," is not true. You can't be sure that another person will succeed. Such a statement may be harmful in keeping that person from being self-examining. Saying, "You've got a lot of enthusiasm, which should be a great help in undertaking what you want to do," is accurate and encouraging, and doesn't set up unrealistic expectations. Compliments should be freeing, not restricting. Talk about the person and what he does, not about products, conclusions, or things. To say, "You have good color awareness in clothes," is better than saying, "That's a pretty dress." The first statement encourages the person to choose more freely. The second statement ties her to her present style of dress. Likewise, to say, "That's a great idea," ties one to the idea, while the statement, "You really think things through," encourages one to think more deeply about things. And so we've learned that productive criticism or correction, which leads to winning relationships, deals with only the important issues and how to correct mistakes. Character flaws, motivation, and commitment must be considered only when the atmosphere is calm and when authentic praise can be used to counteract the unpleasantness the criticism is sure to produce. Even at that time, however, you can use terms and concepts that are supportive and lead to higher expectations for the future. Using the information and methods given here can prepare you for times of frustration and nip problem situations in the bud with the acceptance and support from those you are criticizing and confronting. On this side of the tape, we will integrate, assimilate, and apply the information that you learned on the other side. A word of caution before we begin. Never play this tape in a moving car, for this is a relaxation tape and designed to put you into a relaxed state of mind. So never play this tape when you are to maintain concentration in the awakening state. Now, close your eyes and take a comfortable position, because in order to relax, you must be in a relaxed position. Try to reach a state similar to the one you experience between being awake and drifting into natural sleep. Don't question, don't analyze, and above all, don't try and help me put you into a state of relaxation, because the only part of you that controls relaxation is the subconscious mind, and conscious efforts of the mind will only produce equal and opposite results. The intentional production of a relaxed state depends upon the decreasing of organized brain activity. This can be done effectively by decreasing the input to the conscious mind. Eye closure or limitation of vision decreases input. The disregard of all other sounds but the sound of my voice decreases input. Relaxation of the body decreases the number of signals the mind is receiving from the muscles of the body. If you can be induced to stop thinking, there's a profound decrease in organized brain activity. Except for a moment that only two things exist in the universe: the space occupied by your body and the sound of my voice. Focus your attention like the beam of a flashlight on the sound of my voice without giving any heed to the contents of my words. Begin by relaxing the muscles of your feet. Let every muscle fiber let go. Become slack and loose, loose and limp, limp and numb, numb and heavy. Feel all the tension and stress leaving the muscles of your feet. Continue with the muscles of your legs. Feel them letting go, becoming numb and slack, slack and detached, detached and soft, soft and be numb. Feel your legs and feet becoming heavy and warm. The muscles of your thighs are strong, but you relax them in identical manner. Just let them rest. Eliminate even the tone of these muscles. Allow them to become slack and heavy, heavy and limp, limp and free and detached, soft and loose, as you release all tension from this part of your body. Relax your conscious mind as you release all tension and stress from the muscles of the body and feel yourself begin to become deeper and deeper and deeper relaxed. Deeper and deeper. Just let go. The area of the hips is a constant source of tension and stress. Just let your hips let go, as if they were flattening out upon the surface on which they rest. Disconnect all the different muscles. Let them become flaccid and numb, numb and slack, slack and detached, and limp as they let go and rest. Let your conscious mind rest too. Don't question or analyze. Just drift deeper and deeper and deeper into a state of mental relaxation. The muscles of your abdomen are constantly on the job of containing the viscera. This is a good opportunity to let them take a break and rest. So just let them become limp and slack. Let them feel free, detached and warm. As you relax the different muscles of the body, and as they rest and relax, their requirements become greatly reduced, and the internal organs will also rest. The rate of your breathing and heartbeat will slow down. Your breathing will become abdominal and shallow. All your organs are relaxing to the utmost as you become more and more relaxed. Let go and let yourself sink deeper and deeper into relaxation. Feel the muscles of the small of your back following the same pattern of relaxing. Feel them becoming lax and limp and free. Feel them letting go. Rest your mind and sink deeper and deeper into relaxation. Deeper and deeper. Relax the muscles of your chest and back. Allow all of them to become loose and slack, slack and limp and numb. All tension and stress leaving this part of your body. As you relax new areas of the body, the ones we have already relaxed will continue to increase their relaxation to a point when we begin to become unaware of these parts of the body. Eventually, you will reach a state when you become pure mind and no body. Just let yourself go and drift one notch deeper, deeper and deeper relaxed. Let your shoulders flatten out against the surface upon which they rest. Allow all the muscles to become limp, to release all tension and stress, to become numb and loose, loose and slack and lax, heavy and detached. And then experience this feeling slowly flowing down to relax the muscles of your upper arms and through the elbows to make all the muscles of your forearms numb and soft, soft and flabby as it continues through the wrists to relax the muscles of the hands and fingers. All these fibers becoming numb and detached, free and soft as you become deeper and deeper and deeper relaxed. Continue by relaxing the muscles of your neck. Feel every one of these fibers letting go of all tension, becoming slack and heavy, becoming limp and numb, numb and soft and pliable as you drift deeper and deeper, deeper and deeper into relaxation. Just release and let things happen as they happen. Now we're going to relax the muscles of your scalp. Just feel these thousands of muscles becoming flabby and loose. Feel them resting. Feel them becoming placid to a point where your scalp just feels like something that is only covering the back part of your skull, like a wig or a cap or hat. You are reaching a state of total relaxation, deeper and deeper and deeper relaxed. Your face is like a mass of jelly-like substance, and as you relax the muscles of your forehead, the muscles of your cheeks and eyes, these parts become flabby and soft, soft and numb, numb and limp, and slowly sink into that jelly-like mass. Let go and become more and more relaxed. Let the muscles of your nose, lips, and jaws follow the same procedure, and notice that they become lax and detached, detached and numb, as they also vanish into that jelly-like mass. Relax the muscles of your ears and feel them becoming loose and limp as they hang free and detached at the sides of your head. Just continue letting go entirely and drift deeper and deeper into a relaxed state. I want you to visualize as vividly as you can the scene I am about to describe. You are walking along the beach. It is mid-July. It is very, very warm. It is 5 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun has not yet begun to set, but it is getting low on the horizon. The sun is a golden blazing yellow. The sky a brilliant blue, the sand a dazzling, glistening white in the sunlight. Feel the cold, wet, firm, hard-packed sand beneath your feet. Taste and smell the salt in the air. There's a residue of salt deposited on your lips from the ocean spray. You can taste it if you lick your lips. Hear the beating of the waves, the rhythmic lapping to
and fro, back and forth of the water against the shore. Hear the far-off cry of a distant gull as you continue to walk. You are drifting deeper and deeper into relaxation, sinking deeper and deeper. You come to a sand dune, a mound of pure white sand. Covering the mound are bright yellow buttercups, deep pink moss roses. You sit down on its crest and look out to sea. The sea is like a mirror of silver reflecting the sun's rays, a mass of pure white light, and you are gazing intently into this light. As you continue to stare into the sun's reflection of the water, you begin to see flecks of violet, darting spots of purple intermingled with the silver. Everywhere there is silver and violet. There is a violet line along the horizon, a violet halo around the flowers. Now the sun is beginning to set. With each movement, with each motion of the sun into the sea, you become deeper and deeper relaxed. The sky is slowly turning crimson, scarlet, pink, amber, gold, orange, as the sun sets. You are engulfed in a deep purple twilight of velvety blue haze. You look up into the night sky. It is a brilliant, starry night. The beating of the waves, the smell and taste of the salt, the sea, the water, the sky, and you feel yourself carried upward and outward into space, one with the universe. And now I'm going to count from 1 to 3, and with every count that I take, you are going to drift one notch deeper into a profound, relaxed, hypnotic trance. 1, sinking deeper and deeper. 2, deeper and deeper. 3, deep relaxation. And as I continue talking to you, you will let the sound of my voice increase the depth of your relaxation. You will pay no attention to the contents of my words, going deeper and deeper into relaxation. You have learned many principles as to how to give and take criticism. We are going to assimilate these principles and have you visualize in your mind real-life situations. This is a fantasy, but I want you to make it real. Bring in as many details as you can. First of all, imagine yourself receiving criticism. Notice your body reactions. And notice these behaviors. In accepting criticism, you listen to what the critic has to say, without speaking or discouraging him. You rephrase the criticism in your mind in terms of ways you choose to act. You use your intelligence to help articulate the objections rather than obscure them. You ask the critic politely what suggestions he may have as alternatives. You thank anyone who offers honest criticism, especially those who have nothing to gain and possibly something to lose. Once you've discovered that criticism doesn't have to destroy your confidence, your friendships, or your career, you can go a long way in improving all three. And now create a situation in your mind where you are giving criticism to another person. It may be at home or at work or in a restaurant. Choose whatever situation you would like and make it real for you. Notice that you present the data on which your inferences are based before stating the inference. You always have actual information available, and you avoid words like always and never. You complain directly to the person involved and not to anyone else. You don't compare the behavior to that of other people, and you make your complaint as soon as you can do so privately, because waiting allows anger to build. You criticize only those things that the person has the capacity to change, noting the faults in the performance, not the performer. There is no need for you to apologize for your complaint, to use sarcasm, or to ask for their motivation in doing that which you object to. You use the sandwich technique. A positive comment, an area for improvement, and hope for better performance in the future. Or you use the EFA technique, an empathetic remark, a factual remark, and a call for action. If you never compliment the other person, you can't expect him to remain open to your criticism. And it's a good practice to thank people for listening to your criticism. See yourself now at ease in both situations, maintaining perfect relationships with those people around you, and feeling good about yourself and your communication skills. And here we come now with the awakening suggestions. At the count of five, your eyes are to open. Your mind is to be clear and alert. The number is one. Begin a stirring in your body and begin coming up. Two, feel the energy surging through your hands and your legs. Three, begin to stretch and move, bringing yourself up, up, up from a deep, restful, relaxing sleep. Four, your mind will be clear and alert. You're going to feel better than ever before, better than you have in a long, long time. Five, open your eyes. Begin bringing yourself around, wide awake and alert, refreshed and relaxed, feeling better than you've ever felt before.